My name is Johan Johansson, as we say in Sweden. This is a very Swedish name. I would like to inform you all about that. We have some great sponsors bringing me here. I'm very, very, very happy to be here. Really proud to be here. I mean, I've only been in the meeting industry or the meeting business or what you call it for perhaps 10, 12 years. So I'm just, you know, fresh prince in Bel Air. And I've had like fantastic luck during my years being, you know, able to facilitate, make congresses, produce events, use meetings as part of the big corporate strategies, and finally being able to present my ideas at this place, at this forum, the heart and the muscles of the meeting industry. Thank you very much. Thank you, and thank you for being here. It's an honor for me. Meetings is something I would say, crazy about. I love meetings, and I believe in meetings. I think meetings have such a great potential. And when I worked with meetings for some different organizations and for different companies, I have seen what kind of results that have been able to produce. For example, New York Times, every year they make a list of 44 places to go. I know I shouldn't go, you know, into the image like this. It's not a good behavior for a speaker. But, you know, the actual meaning of creativity. Have you heard that one? Probably. It's like, you know, looking at how everybody does and do the opposite. Very simple. So I'm going into the image and being very creative, okay? Like this. Now, they make a list of the 44 places to go every year, and I worked with a small place. A small place in the Scandinavian Alps called Fjällnäs, Fjällnäs Reserve. Please look it up on the World Wide Web. And I mean, in this survey they point out like Washington, D.C., Beirut, I think even Malaga were somewhere down at the 40 places. And this little hotel in the mountains of Sweden got to be number 6 in the world 2009. This tiny little place that I don't think anybody of you have heard about. But they have a meeting concept called Never Walk the Same Path Twice. It's a story about the Sami culture. How they really care for the nature. How they never try to make a path. They wouldn't dream about making a road. And how they care about their environment. But also how that make them be innovative, because they can never choose the same path twice. They always have to think of a different new path every time they go out in the mountain. So that's the concept we applied on Fjällnäs and their meeting concepts. Isn't that a beautiful story? I mean, you all heard about, I mean, Fisk. He actually, in one way, he made the day yesterday with his presentation, his keynote. What do you think about it? Yeah, great. But at the same time, he made my life so hard, you know, coming here talk about the next generation of meeting. He's raised the bar, hasn't he? But he also talked about being different. Every time take a different road. Dare to be different, I would say. Yeah, so meetings has potential. Meetings is also all over the place. Have you noticed? In management literature, in business magazines. This is actually an image from an office, a Stockholm office called the Bauhaus, where you are sitting in the center of the office having your meeting so everybody can see them. And this is Bloomingdale's head office in London, where the meeting areas is like a tree of knowledge coming from the bottom level and then reaching up through the different levels of the building and the structure. So the meeting is in the center and it's focus. And I think it's our time now. I'm saying, and this is perhaps a little pretentious, but I'm saying meetings are what design was for companies in the mid-90s and what IT and technology was for companies during the millennium. Not the bubble, after when it worked, when everybody was happy. Now it's time for meetings to do the same thing that design did in the mid-90s and technology and information technology and the World Wide Web actually did for companies in the millennium. Do you agree? Oh, that was actually a bit shy, I agree. I will try to convince you these days, but perhaps that shyness could be confirmed, because we are up to something, and even if we see great potential, and it's so exciting times to work in the meeting industry, we have a lot of people looking at us and trying to decrease our budgets and questioning actually our competence. And research are being published from 96 till 2002, 2006, implying that actually half or 50% of all meetings being held are not being only bad meetings, but even being counterproductive meetings. And this is pretty tough, isn't it? And how can we, you know, get away from these kind of numbers? How can we move forward and get everybody to believe that meetings are, you know, so important that we believe it? I mean, consider the effects of bad meetings today. Where do people create today? In meetings, of course. Where do they develop today? In meetings. And then we can't have an image of that half of those meetings would be bad or even counterproductive. So I've thought, and I've given this number a lot of thought during the last at least 6 years. Why is it so? Even if it's just a figure that's around out there in the media or in the opinion makers, why is it so? And I think we have a couple of key issues. The first key issue, I think, is the knowledge about us as humans, how we work, what we like and what we don't like. I'm always happy when I see people with pencils and pens and papers, because only 1% of what I'm saying to you here today will be left in 30 days if you don't take notes. That's how it is, I'm sorry to say. And of course, if you don't act upon that knowledge and implement that in your meeting strategies, what will happen? Of course, I'm just going to be a tiny fraction in your memory, a little finger, a toe perhaps. That's all that's left of me in 30 days. That knowledge we have to implement. But this is actually just a tip of the iceberg, a bit depressing, you know, tip of the iceberg for me as a speaker. Because I mean, it's just, you know, not remembering that's not important when it comes to meeting, when it comes to transforming message across this room. It's, of course, about faith. How to create faith. How do we convince each other? And then we have to know, and I think you all know this, that it's only 10% what we say, or what I say today, that you believe in. The message that I'm trying to put across this room, it's only till 10% of what you believe in. So what is more important than what I'm actually saying today for you as human beings? Any ideas? Come on, you are the professionals. You are the heart and the muscles of the industry. All right, 3 times more important is how I say what I'm saying. Because you are so much smarter than just to listen what's coming out from my mouth. How is this man saying what he believes in? In what rhythm, what pace In what commitment does he have? That's three times more important than what I'm saying. But then we still have 60% somewhere traveling around between us, creating this faith. And what is that? Well, that's why I'm so happy that Anne was here and creating this space for me. I'm not so happy, though, that the lightning is very harsh. It's not really able to see what I'm presenting. But I'm happy that I took, you know, some nice clothes on, because it's 66 times more important how I dress, where I am, how my body expresses what I believe in, the haircut, don't remember. So then my question is, should we go for the 10%? And I know we work a lot with those ones. Or should we work with this 90% that's built up around us, the selective perception? Of course, a rhetoric question. And when you start dig into those kind of numbers in the search of an explanation of the first number we saw, 50%, you understand this is about neurology, how we work again, that our brain is also a fantastic resource, a fantastic computer, a mega computer, but also a fantastic obstacle. You know, our senses are, of course, the way we interact with the world around us. And when we consume information, researchers have found out that we can translate that consuming of information into bits, just like a computer, bits per second. And every second we consume somewhere around 10 million bits with our eyes. Every second when we are awake. Just consuming everything through our eyes. Has anybody a clue about the next most important sense when it comes to consuming information? Wow! This is diversity. This is great. Again, please. You once said
smell.
Very good. Ear. Yes, of course.
Touch.
The lady in the pink jacket, she nailed it. And this is somewhat actually overseen, that our skin is the next most important resource for us to consume information. Are you sitting all right over there? Yeah, okay. You're swinging around. You as well, I hope. A bit too nice, actually, I believe. See how long I will have you with me in this presentation. The traditionalists, how are you back there? Feeling great? Classic zone, I mean? Yeah, good. This is really important for us. And then we have of course, others. The ear consumes a lot less than you believe, actually. Just a tenth of a million. The nose, the same. The smell, of course. The tongue, a total of more than 11 million bits each second are consumed into our brain. And this is, of course, for us, as meeting professionals, very interesting information. But how much of this information are we really aware of? How much do we know we are actually taking in? Please give me just an idea. How many percent?
10%.
Yes. Somebody more? 1%. Yeah, 1%. I agree. We aren't that smart, actually. So 1-10%, somewhere in between. 16 till 40 bits per second are we aware of. That's what you and me see right now. What we believe, what we are looking at each other, we see right now. 16 till 40. I would suggest that I am 16. And some of you probably will be 40, not more. Where does it all go? Where does it all go? All the rest of the information our brain consumes into our subconsciousness. And what does the subconsciousness do with us? It gives us the gut feeling. And what does gut feeling do with us? Yes, it makes us take decisions. It makes us feel good. It makes us feel confident. So once again, should we work with those 1640, the ones that we always do, the logical ones, or should we think of all the sensors we have there with 11 million possibilities instead? Yeah, well, it doesn't sound that easy, doesn't it? But knowing this, and knowing that all our decisions are actually made within 12 seconds, so quick were you when you judged me in my appearance, in my way of speaking, and actually I have a very hard time changing that perception. And last but not least, let me tell you that, is a figure that tells us, actually, this figure should be 99.7%. That's the latest research showing. But I've said, and I've said it's, I mean, I'm moderate, I'm conservative. I say 98%. That's the exactness, that's the similarity. Our genetic structure, our DNA are similar to the chimpanzees. So we are all chimpanzees, actually, to 90%. So please, please, everybody, get up. Just stand up for 1 second and move those chimpanzee arms, please, and legs, please. Come on, shake it up, because I know you will fall to sleep otherwise. I think you're all right there. So, okay, great. How does all we chimpanzees feel now? Better? More focused? Okay, great, great. Please, please, sit down again. Please sit down. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so we have unlocked the first question of why we perhaps don't measure up or reach higher in the scores when it comes about how people believe meetings are working. What could be the next question? Yes, of course, studying, understanding, being even better to explore who is in charge, who actually make the decisions today. And in the future, of course, this is really important for us. Who will be the ones driving decisions, will influence and actually make demands about how industry will work? I mean, you heard about Fisk's presentation yesterday and the fantastic presentation before him. Do you have any suggestions new decision makers that will influence our business? Ideas? X and Y, thank you. I agree completely. Anyone more? Ah, women. Women, yes. I agree completely. Anything else? 50 plus, absolutely, absolutely. I would say that my top choice for a decision maker that would completely change the way we make meetings will be... Have you seen my presentation before? I think you have. I think you have. They are the alpha females. The alpha females are aesthetic, emphatic, need a flow, and they love dialogue. They have not been trained. You know that 90% of all the management literature comes actually from military background in one way or another. And of course, what do you do when you are a military? You are saying how others should do, and when they should do it, or how they should think. These ones, and this is the Valley Girls. They are head of Google, Ling, and of course Facebook. They are dominating the world as we are seeing it today. They are in charge. And they want participation. They want commitment. They want meetings where everyone is engaged. They want to hear others' opinion. They don't want to point out with just one hand. And I think you all alpha females know this, they are aesthetic. They want things to be beautiful. Why? Because we work better Think about the 11 million bits again. Should we work with the whole space, or should we just focus on the hand or on what it should say? This will completely change the way we work. And they are becoming important because they are going into the decision-maker roles. They are making money. They don't make money for themselves. They make for their family and for their business. They are in charge. Exciting. We have the X groups as a second very important decision-maker group that we have to respond to in one way or another. What do you think X groups means for something? Means for something? Grown-ups with Xbox. Very easy. Very easy. We love to play. We are passionate. We are children of the 60s and 70s. We didn't have very much authority when we grew up. So we love to play. We love to live and perhaps work as well. When we work, we want to see ourselves in studios. When we are 40, we think we are 30. When we are 30, we think we are 20. Connectivity, of course, but that's something that we all know. They are passion-driven. They want to have fun. They can't understand why we need to do it like we do today. Why do we need to work first? This whole day, work, 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 work. And then go out and have fun. And get very drunk. So we get so drunk that we forget everything we learned during the day. Very odd. And we have been doing that for so long. They want to mix and blend and have fun and do work all between and around and mixed into each other. How can we create that? How can we make that? And then we have the neo-greens, and they are called the neo-greens because they aren't just green. They are very demanding. They know that they can have the best. They know they are spoiled. They want to have great design, great interior, great experiences. But it couldn't be on the cost of somebody else. And they want to see innovation because they are out there looking around, understanding techniques that not only makes our conference carbon neutral, but they, like many others, have found a manifesto called eco-intelligence. And they love that idea that says that when we are in here, how do we actually become carbon negative? Or how can we actually be, by our appearance in here, make the climate outside better outside? Could we actually clean the air outside? Could this facility actually make the water outside even cleaner? That is the next step for us. Those are the questions we need to ask when we actually create great meetings. Then we have the neo-greens on our side. And it has to be beautiful. And then we have the Rainbow Youth. And they we heard about a lot. And we actually saw this image about the Harley riding granddad. And he wasn't, I don't know if he was a granddad, he was like 50 plus. But they are experienced driven. And why are these ones so important? Yes, two major reasons. One, they have money. A lot of money. These are the ones who will spend the most the coming 5 or 10 years. The second, now it's actually the same. They are in position. They are in boardrooms. They take decisions. They lead global corporations. And in that work, they have a limited time. They have limited time left. And they are focused on experiences. And what happens if they don't get experiences, sitting in ballrooms or being on conferences? What happens with these ones, the Rainbow Youth? They fall asleep. Very simple, and we see that. How can we get every minute into the meeting engaging, carbonating, so they are alert? They get the experience they deserve, actually. And then we have last, again, but not least, the Rolodex teens. Do anybody know what a Rolodex is? It's you know, where you put your business card, like this scroller. You know, you have this on your desk and you put your business card into it, and you scroll and you find your contacts, and they shift. They shift identity. They shift styles as quick as we, you know, rotate on this Rolodex business card flip. Why do they shift identity? Why do they shift styles? The XYs? Because they won't be compared with anyone. Me, 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 and myself. I'm in control. I'm in charge. See me. I mean, I'm a generation where, you know, everybody wore jeans and jeans jacket, and we had the same Converse sneakers. Everybody was the same. And we felt so, you know, like, ah, this is perfect. We are looking the same, everybody. Perfect. And these ones are quite opposite. How can you see me? How can you make me feel important in this meeting? How can you make me contribute in every part of this meeting? That's the question they will drive. See me. I want to be on stage. Why should you only be on stage? I have things to say. And they know everything as well. They can't understand why we say. Well, we don't have this information on the meeting. So we have to postpone this decision and move on. They say, why? Just Google it. Just find it. Now, here, please. I mean, we are all, you know, connected here through Wi-Fi, and that's great. But all the information we need here now, can we access that? That's the question the Rolodex team will say when it comes to meeting. I mean, there's so much to say about all these decision makers, but when it comes to meetings, we have a couple of big issues to address. Before we move on with another really exciting inspiration, what's going to happen in the nearby future, or already all going on, could you just play, please, you know, like 2 minutes, just discuss between each other, just find new friends, new colleagues, new, and discuss for 2 minutes how these new and very powerful decision makers will influence your meetings, your business in the nearby future. 2 minutes, okay? Just discuss. And please move around if that's possible. 2 minutes. Thank you very much. Discuss between each other. Thank you. Okay, your 2 minutes are up. Please come back with some focus to me. Me, 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 and myself. Thank you very much. Okay, please, let me hear. What was your immediate thoughts about decision makers and how they will affect your meetings in the nearby future? Women.
Yeah.
So, just becoming more and more, and by that number being more influential, they will actually automatically shift the industry. And if we then move to the women over there, what were your thoughts about the new decision makers?
Well, we were thinking we're talking about youth. We have to find out some information and use the meeting totally differently, just load them information during the session. Mm.
Great. Anybody else who want to share ideas about? It's the most scariest question. If I was to say that in Sweden, it would be completely locked down. Everybody would be completely silent and scared to death. So it's a very stupid question, actually. Yeah. All right. And I said three things that would, you know, be very influential when it comes to new meetings, and create great new meetings. And it was about knowing us as humans, I said. And I said, okay, understand new decision maker, their needs. So the human, the needs, and what's left, I believe. That's really important. And I think our industry should do this so much more. And also Fisk, I think, he talked a lot about that the other day. And the thing I think is to Look outside. Look outside in other industries. See what happened there. How do they respond to different trends and tendencies? And how do they work with that? And one thing I believe in very much is just to look at how media has shifted and their role when it comes to communicating, and what have they learned. And just have a look at, you know, ordinary talk show, late night talk show. How do they work when they try to create, you know, connection with the audience? What are the tricks? And if you really study their way of doing it, you soon see that, okay, I'm here, I'm having a conversation over there, there is a drummer over there, and there's a producer talking to me, the audience are clapping over there, and then we have a new guest coming in from there. All around the 360 experience, using the complete area like a theater, actually, to keep our senses up. And it's exactly the same theory that game producers are working today. They know exactly how long we stay focused. They know if we haven't grabbed the person's attention in 4 minutes, we jump track. We develop the game in a completely different direction. That's the input we need to adjust into our industry as well. I mean, it's not, you know, only MTV and music channels who have been, you know, using us to multiple messages. I mean, take just for example Bloomberg again, traditional economy broadcasting news, okay? And we look at the stock market down there, we see an image of something over there, we have the host talking here, behind him another image. Multiple images coming towards us, and we keep focused. That's where we need to pick our inspirations from. When we curated, for example, Cecilia Hirsch's presentation. Cecilia Hirsch is a Swedish space designer, that's for sure. 11,000 engineers in Houston and one female designer designing for space. And when she held a seminar about weightlessness and designing spaces, how should you actually experience that message? Of course, by hanging in a swing. So you feel at least a little bit of that weightlessness when you hear a message. Fernando Humberto Campana, two fantastic Brazilian brothers, made almost 10 years ago their first meeting furniture, an 80-meter long sausage of velvet, you know, swirled into each other. And the idea was to lay down next to each other and have a meeting. I mean, preferable 2, 3, 4, 5 next to each other. To my first office, I actually bought one of those. And I placed CEOs, I placed middle managers into this, and people were so frustrated. So they were actually sitting, you know, next to my sofa and putting their arm next to it. That was the barrier for them to, you know, come across this meeting furniture. While others, especially CEOs and people with a long career, they just jumped into it and said, "Wow, what a great meeting, let's try." And do you think a meeting was ever the same lying down in the boa or sitting like we usually do between us with a table? Designers have already shown the way. Just let them inspire us more. When Jerzy Seymour made this conference during the Vienna Design Week, he invited very much brilliant people to come and speak to an audience. And when they came to this Congress room, they were instead placed eating together a great soup and discussing with each other these issues. I mean, I think just that format instead of a traditional conference is great. Come on, everybody here has something to say. All of you have great competence. Let's mix, let's blend. But what they didn't know when they came here, ate that great soup, sitting on that beautiful snake-like bench and table, and I'm sorry for the image quality, was that they were actually eating the same thing they sat on. So here they make actually the tables, they pour down this material, make chairs, and then they pour some into that plate and serve soup. This is a vegetable soup made from potatoes and different kind of root fruits, and it's actually a perfect component to make chairs. And Vitra, world famous Vitra, has now announced that they are going to make a conference chair based on that soup. This is happening now. Do you think NeoGreens will appreciate this? Perhaps. Just throw the chair out in the nature and a couple of days sooner it will be melting away. Or it will work for years in this climate. But the Arakawa architects, they have really made something beautiful. The Bioslave House outside Hamptons is a house where it's an adventure to get to the toilet. It's a mission to climb down to the kitchen. If you want to, you know, make yourself way out of the house, then you really have to prepare yourself. They say they make spaces for us to live longer and work better and think smarter. Because when we are, with all our 11 million bits engaged, then we are active. When we don't know what's around the corner, we are focused. But when we come into a place where we know everything, we just sit down and we are becoming too comfortable. And according to Arakawa, we even die quicker. And what has happened now with this crazy idea and this fantastic house? They are building a hotel outside Tokyo based on the Bioslave House. It's happening now. How can we incorporate these ideas into our meetings? We were two persons out of 12 going from Europe to see the keynote pitch of Apple's CEO 4 years ago. And, you know, that's magical. You see, I'm a Mac man. So for that's like going to, I don't know, meet the Pope, perhaps. That's the closest I can say. And coming in there and, of course, having high expectations. How will Steve Jobs make his keynote? And he comes in being, you know, really cool, just dressed in jeans and black T-shirt, sitting down on a very, very simple bench on the stage. Seconds later, Jonathan Ive, chief designer, way, way back there, comes in, well, talking, you know, mic'd up. Yeah, hi Steve, this is a great new device, it's called the iPod, it's a touch iPod, it's brand new, really cool. Just coming in, you know, jeans, T-shirt, really cool, really soft, and we just, wow, what's happening now? Bam, just beside, behind Steve on a big stage, I hear, hi Madonna. Hi, Steve, and Madonna comes in and opens up the world into the meeting room. And she's also playing with the new device, trying out iTunes. And we all in there just say, boom, beautiful. And that's a new dress code, they say. They don't work in suits, they work in soft, laid-back style jeans. And they do it differently. Just like we heard yesterday Peter Fisk saying. So, for me, and I hope for all of you, meetings is, from now and further, actually, to see as entertainment. Am I having fun? Is it a wow? Or is it just like it always been? But the most important thing that I would like to address today, and that's actually my finale, that's a new world. A world that will consist of two, up till now, parallel existing worlds. And they are now emerging, and this is really interesting. It's about technology, it's about us trusting technology, it's about us believing that interaction is great, that technology that is implemented in our surfaces is fantastic. When we see, you know, technology problems, we just see the solutions when it's all around us, then we love it. And it's about us really working with technology all the time. And I mean, you have all smartphones and stuff like that. But it already started actually back in 96 when we really saw the first step for us moving closer to the virtual world. It's what's a project called Armchair Activists. And they put up speakers all over Europe in major cities. And you could just text your message that you would like to say into a number, and it was suddenly broadcasted out in the street. You could say political stuff. You could say, I ate a marmalade sandwich in the morning. And it was, you could say you were in love. And it was broadcasted out in the street. Ah, so I can actually go into the cyberspace with just my digital numbers, and then the information will come back in the physical space. And we say, wow, this is really interesting. And now I would like to show some examples where I need to, the lighting to be lower. So I'm going to, you know, keep talking, but I'm going to see if we can get a better image here. And because we're first going to look at Julius Pop, it's beautiful bitfall. It's the same idea as Armchair Activists, but it's more interactive and actually more stunning. Have a look at this. Thousands of of small robots bringing messages from cyberspace into the real world. I saw this in Vienna, and it was beautiful. You could email your expressions, your ideas into this via this website, and then it came out like water. And you could walk under it, you could feel the words you have done being projected by all these small robots. But then Moritz Woldemeyer came along and started to work with lightning and made installations and made products that actually responded upon how we were dressed and how we actually worked in the environment. Have a look at these chairs and this very, very excited reporter.
So much modern technology and design is cold and controlling, quite big brother-like. But I like Moritz's design because it puts you in the driving seat. In fact, you even get to change the colour of the chairs. What I like about Moritz's design as well is its profound sense of playfulness. It's fun, and the world can only be a better place for that.
So if you have a red shirt, then your red aura will be spread out over the wall. You are actually in charge. You are being seen just like the Rolodex teams love. But then came something completely different. An artist started to collaborate with a Messe in Hamburg. He's called Dime, and he's creating a completely new way of actual virtual and physical art. Have a look at this. I mean, imagine coming to a conference hall or a congress hall and you decide what the interior should be. You can decide if you want to go into a beautiful landscape of trees, or you can decide if you want to promote a city. Let's create that city. Let people come into that city. You decide what the landscape should be tomorrow. It's now. It's not in the future. It's happening here. And, I mean, this is something you've already seen. But what's the point of these new touchscreen, multiple user solutions? Well, the point is, of course, not that you can touch. I mean, that's just a function, a feature. But that you can share. Instead of me standing here, we could all contribute. You could be You, over there, could be standing there and sending a message to me here. I could have a look at it, twist it around and send it back. We could all interact and be part of this presentation. Please, please. This is what, for example, the X groups want, need and long for. So I think you can just give me some light. Because I want to explain another fantastic thing that I've worked with together with Philips. Philips has a research, well, I haven't worked, I've followed, has a research laboratory in Eindhoven called ChopLab. If you can, go there. Just experience how they work today with RFID chip, where you have them somewhere on your body perhaps, or perhaps operated into your arm. And just you passing a space, a surface, it starts to communicate to you just by being close. And for example, if this was to be a shop like we see here now, you see a great pair of shoes in this shop window. It's in the middle of the night, so the shop is closed. And you just look at them and they start to appear in front of you. But not only the shoe appear, it's on your foot. And you can rotate it. And you can answer. You can ask and get an answer that says, is it comfortable on my foot? But the color isn't nice. I think I'll shift to another color. That is perfect. I'll have that one. And it's not in the store where I am, and it's closed. So it's being shipped from Hong Kong 2 days later. Bam! This could be in a conference. This could be, of course, in a hotel. And it's now, it's not in the future, it is now. Could you please turn down light for the last film in this session? This is Johnny Lee, and Johnny Lee is miraculous, he's fantastic. Johnny Lee has just with a simple Wii, Nintendo Wii remote controller, opened up the virtual space and brought it into the physical world. Have a look at this.
First, I'm going to show you what it looks like without head tracking, which is what displays normally look like. You can see that although it's a picture of a 3D room, the image looks very two-dimensional and bound to the surface of the TV.
Wow, look here.
Bam. Now with head tracking turned on, the TV actually looks like the entrance to a real room. Just like in real life, by moving our head around, we can look behind objects. And if you look really closely, some targets actually appear to be floating out in front of the screen, reaching into the real world. If we get closer to the screen, we get closer to the objects, and we can even get behind the ones floating in front of the screen. Seeing this picture of a football stadium, if you move right, you can see more of the field. If you move left, you can see more of the stands. And if you get closer to the screen, you see more of everything, just like a real window.
Please, lightning. Isn't this miraculous? Just a window to the next side made by a $5, $10, $20 remote controller from a Wii Nintendo. This is now. And EA Games are actually presenting their plans of making a game based on this technology later this year. It should have been last year, but it will come this year instead. So it's coming now. If you go to Champs-Élysées and go to Adidas flagship store, you can go in, you can have an assistant helping you try out the new shoes. And what you will see when you are standing in the middle of the store is your projection of yourself, your digital image of yourself in front of you. And you can walk and you can see how you in the virtual place are moving, and he can show and show how you could do differently, what shoes you should wear. And it looks like this beautifully made, with sensors in the roof and sensors in the floor, projecting your image. And this is just the beginning. This can sound scary. Mac Nicholson has made already a device, American consultant Mac Nicholson, large consulting group, that in 15 seconds scans you. Scans you when you are perhaps waiting at the hotel lobby. Scans you when you are looking what floor you should go into the large stores, and create a perfect copy, a perfect virtual copy of you in 15 seconds. Here we see a tattoo artist apply this technique on one of the clients, and suddenly you become virtual. A virtual copy of yourself, be able to move around out in virtual space when you perhaps asleep. buying shoes when you don't have the time, meeting people, making, looking up things that you would like to look up when you don't have the time. It's happening now, it's not in the future. So for me, this is a new world. A completely new world. Exciting world with which demands new rules. And I say to my clients and customers, we have a couple of rules. The first rule when we create meetings or meetings spaces, break the box. There aren't any box. Don't think outside the box. Consider the box vaporized. Let the world in. Let every meeting be part of the world. Bring in other persons from outside the world. Make the content you need accessible always in the meeting. The first rule. The other ones, let me participate. Tickle my imagination. Become participation. Instead of delegate or what else you call it, make them participants. And if you want a meeting like this, sure, absolutely, great, fine. But if you want to do it like this, even better. You decide. It's your choice. Or use all senses. Use all 11 million possible ways to create a feeling. These great humanoids made by a Brazilian designer. This is perhaps not the solution, but it's a wonderful example. So we say meetings are actually something of the past. Let's bring gatherings instead, where everybody are engaged. We created a cube, or a concept called Le Cube, where there's nothing at first. You have nothing to do in there. Your imagination creates the foundation. If you see something to use, a cube, a block, then it's up to you to use it. But if you want a blue ocean, because it's Monday morning, the completely room transformed into this ocean. Or if you want to see your audience act in the city, if you want to be part of this vibrant city, then you can just decide to become and see the action here, now. Or if you want to be, of course, connected with your chief designer on the other side of the world, or just have a discussion with a colleague that is in another city, you should decide full size. Or if you have perhaps ecology on your agenda, discuss it in a proper environment. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? Sounds fun? So we did it. We created Lake Cube. We made it physically. I'm sorry for the quality of the image because of the lightning here, the well-designed lightning. We don't see it good. But here is the first prototype of Lake Cube, actually being built in collaboration with the best design companies, furniture companies in the world, I would say. Collaboration with the most interesting technology companies and, of course, the meeting methodologists, all incorporated in creating the Lake Cube. And you know what? During 3 months, 5,000 persons have been in Le Cube, trying out, see how they want to perform meetings, how they want to work in the meeting room of the future. And that has given us, of course, you will meet in completely new ways if you decide. You make a creative chaos, you make a workshop, you make a session, you make a presentation, or you make perhaps a majlis where you use ideas that have been around for thousands of years in creating new innovative meetings. You decide what's up. So I say, and I hope, and I dream, and I long for a meeting that should be as simple as this and as smart as this. And I think the only way to come close to meeting that are 100% good is to think and act a bit like Malcolm McLaren. He was the manager for Sex Pistols. He was one of the founders of that fantastic band. And he says this, please listen up.
And he walked in again. He said, "So you're still bloody here then?" He said, "So you've learned a little bit about failure. I'm glad to hear it, but don't think you can just fail." He And I thought, my God, what is he going to say now? He said, well, because, you know, you can't just fail. You've got to learn how to become a magnificent failure. The most brilliant failure. Because it's better to be a flamboyant failure than any kind of benign success.
So please, be bold, be brave, make happy and fantastic mistakes. And let's together create new great meetings. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. It's a great pleasure to have you all here. Thank you.